Yo, this is Will.
And I'm Will.
This is Newt Gorilla Media, and today we're going to be breaking down Mom and Dad.
By the way, we're back. Don't know if you knew we were gone, probably not, but we're here again, and we're taking a look at this here movie picture.
Oh, yes. We were flipping through movies, and I wanted to do one of my favorite slasher movies ever, but Will almost jumped off a building, so we had to stop.
I mean, maybe eventually one day I will build up a tolerance to such things, but until then, we're just going to do Nicolas Cage movies.
Oh my god, I forgot how much I love Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I think this all started with Bangkok Dangerous. By the way, don't worry, we're not just going to be doing Nicolas Cage, it's just a joke. However, it is hilarious to watch this dude...
career slowly spiral down.
Yeah, it's like he's actually going crazy and people are just filming it for fun.
Oh yes, it is so great.
But let's get into some of the background of the production on this here movie video viewing extravaganza.
Yeah, so we found this on Hulu actually, because we were just flipping through movies and it was great. And if you want to, yeah, so IMDb gave this a 5.5, Rotten Tomatoes gave it 75%, and Metacritic, our first Metacritic thing that we found, was 59%.
Yeah, so interesting on the Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave it a 75.
Yes.
The audience score was somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. It's not uncommon for Rotten Tomatoes to have a difference, but it's... it's weird to see the critics actually like this movie compared to other people.
The budget was $7 million.
That's actually, it's kind of cheap for a movie these days. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, their box office earnings were...
the box office earnings was $169,209.
Yeah, so somebody lost out pretty damn big. Yes. Just as a side note, it was released... in affiliation, I don't know how they use this jargon, but Armory Films, XYZ Films, and the Fizz Facility all helped produce this film. Armory has such titles as Zombieverse.
Great movie. I suggest you watch it. It's on Netflix.
And a Netflix show that came out. I haven't seen it yet. I think it's a show called Mudbound, which...
never heard of it.
I've heard decent things about it. XYZ Films is most notable for releasing The Raid Redemption and The Raid 2, two of my favorite movies.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I saw them, but that was years back.
And I looked up the Fizz Facility, and they have some movies out, but I've never really heard of them or watched them, so I didn't feel like mentioning any of them. If you guys know anything about them, let me know. This was not one of their highest rated films that was on their release list, but they had a few out there that seemed to be okay at face value.
So, the director and writer was Brian Taylor.
Man, he's taking a lot of weight for this one, huh?
Yeah, he wrote it and directed it. So, and then Nicolas Cage is the father, being cagey as always.
Oh, yes.
Salim Blair.
Selma?
No. Selma.
No. Are you sure you read that right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Selim?
Selim, yeah.
I guess.
Selim Blair as the mother. Annie Winters as the daughter. And Zachary Arthur as the son.
Yeah, so just your classical, your new age atomic family, you know, mom, dad, two kids, two and a half, I guess, is the
preferred.
Yeah, you gotta have your half kid somewhere. But so we open the movie on an interesting note.
Oh yes.
Static, which is one thing, but then we see someone in a car turn off the radio, at which point they leave. They get out of the vehicle, but we notice they have a kid in a stroller back there, or a little baby carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we realize that that vehicle is being abandoned in the middle of a railroad crossing with train horns a-blasting.
Oh, yes. And then we cut to this James Bond-esque opening credits.
Yeah, it is definitely kind of weird. It's very artsy.
It's very offset from the rest of the movie,
exactly.
In my opinion.
It almost doesn't fit in. It's very noir-esque.
Yes.
But when we finally get to the action again, we're basically going to be building up a really typical, kind of cliche, upper-middle-class family structure. We got a teenage daughter, talking to her boyfriend about their issues.
Always.
Apparently, he's going to take a test. And then, of course, the little brother, in the middle of the phone call, interrupts the his sister, which is annoying. You know, eye rolling, I hate you, wish you were never born kind of thing. And in the middle of their chase, I remember this being way too dramatic, but a picture hits the ground.
Yeah.
And we have the first of many jarring camera edit choices from the cinematographer.
So the cinematography in this movie was absolutely terrible. The movie was fine.
Yeah.
But the cinematography was just like zoom, 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 cut, 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 cut.
It was
just
very,
for one scene.
Right. And in the middle of almost nothing, it was Jason Bourne level, if you've ever seen those movies, of cuts. For sometimes it was in action scenes, and other times it was just for no reason, like in this camera, or mm-hmm. this picture frame hitting the ground. It seemed very zombie-esque for no reason.
Yes.
But as we're cutting through the morning, we actually find out the family is watching the news clip of what we just saw at the beginning. So we see the headlines, you know, vehicle is abandoned in the middle of a railroad crossing, child dies, and the family is kind of talking about it. Nicolas Cage is actually playing with his son, eating breakfast, and he uses the car and, like, runs over some action figures,
yeah,
and squirts ketchup all over the place. It's just, I mean, it's subtle, it's fast, but it's so outlandish already that you know this is going to be a
Nicolas Cage movie.
A great movie.
But I want to say, like, with this movie doing, like, subtle shit like that, it's very interesting, and I like the way the director directed it. It's just the cinematography is just off for this movie.
Yeah, there are some choices where it doesn't really, it distracts and it confuses for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But, so the family in general is talking about, you know, I have a boyfriend, and Nicolas Cage is like, I used to be 17, you know, I don't know what he's thinking. It's very cliche.
Yeah.
Even Grandpa, who's coming for dinner later, is a Vietnam vet, and there's some rather great scenes about that. But we leave breakfast, mom and daughter first, and we actually have a disagreement on this.
Yes.
But I'm not going to hold to it too firm. The daughter is getting driven to school by the mom, and she's using her phone, right, like a good old-fashioned millennial.
And goddamn millennials, God.
She's scrolling through Instagram and texting her friend. And mm-hmm. they do, so a lot of movies now are doing text overlays,
yes,
where it shows, you know, what's being texted. And
this movie, they make it see-through.
Right, but it's on purpose. The first thing is when she's scrolling through Instagram, the feed actually shows up kind of between her and the mother,
mm-hmm,
in kind of a framing way. And I think it's on purpose. They're trying to demonstrate that it's a wall between the daughter and the mom who's trying to talk to her about, you know, cliche stuff. Like, we don't trust you anymore. We used to be best friends. And the daughter is, you know, just being annoyed by it and keeps scrolling. There's even a point where the mom calls it Facebooking.
Facebooking.
And I think that's a call out, and it's a bad one. It's cliche, right? Oh, mom doesn't know, you know, it's not just called Facebooking kind of thing. And in that way, I don't like the scene, but it builds the tension between the parents and the kids a little bit.
I want to say, with the child actor they picked to pick the little to play the little brother, they went too old.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because this kid looks like he could be in fifth grade,
at least,
but he is wearing, like, toddler pajamas.
Yeah, like all day, but he's every bit already through elementary school.
Oh, yes.
And that is kind of weird, you're right. So we cut back to the kid and dad, the boy.
Mm-hmm.
And
boy!
Niño!
Niño!
But they're, like, playing a little bit, and dad leaves, and it's one of the first scenes where we see it get just
cagey.
Oh, it's not even cagey, it's, like, mafia cagey. The kid, like, throws something at him, and he turns around all super serious. Like, he's... The only way I can describe it is if Nicolas Cage ever played a mafia don, and he was, like, staring at some dude who was gonna get bumped off, like, this is the way he would stare at somebody. And he does it a couple times, but then he just kind of, like, Cage laughs away. He's like, ha, 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 I'm just kidding, I'll see you later. Like, It's just, it's so bad.
And then the only scene in this movie to make it rated R pops up whenever Nicolas Cage sits in the car.
Yeah, so he gets in the... It's so weird, too. It makes almost no sense. But he's getting into the car for work, and he has this random flashback of... And it almost doesn't look like him. I guess it's supposed to be a younger him.
Yeah.
With a mustache and long hair. Doing donuts in a Firebird. And he has this chick slapping her tits in his face.
While he's doing a donut.
Yeah, like straddling him as they're driving, which is just so reckless. But I guess that's a, you know... a good memory for him. And he just heads off to work after that. We're at school with the daughter.
And then this is where they get the text bubbles right, I feel like.
Yeah, so they
decently bring... right. Yeah. In the car, they didn't do it as right, but I can understand where you're coming from.
They didn't do it as right. Okay.
Yeah.
But the main story is in this little scene, we're introduced to her teacher and her friend in class, but they both end up getting their phones taken away. Her friend, the daughter's friend, is listening to some absolutely horrible, like, dark,
horrible rap. Music.
And she's, like, banging away at it. Like, she's headbanging. And obviously she's going to get caught for listening to music. So she's just, I guess, being a little rebel child.
Always. She's wearing a choker.
Yeah. She's got little bonbon, like, hair pieces. She's got dark eyeliner. She's just such a rebel.
She's,
but anyways.
She's edgy.
So her phone gets taken. And even though her friend sees that, the daughter texts her and says, good luck. And which, of course, the teacher has the phone. So he just texts her back, you know, bring me your phone, too. It's all very strange. But we go back to the house where the maid, which I don't know if we mentioned earlier.
No, we didn't.
They have a maid who's Chinese. That factors into the whole grandpa killing Charlie thing. And the mother being, like, obliviously racist.
Yeah.
So it's all very cliche, you know, it's very, nothing is groundbreaking here. No. I guess they're just calling it out, maybe that's what's groundbreaking. But she's sitting in the kitchen using a meat tenderizer.
Pounding some meat.
gotta beat the meat.
Oh yes, always.
And the maid's daughter, I guess, works with her.
Yeah, but that daughter looks like she's as old as the son and should be at school.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the school day.
That's kind of the weird thing about it. But immediately, the maid turns from using the tenderizer and just kills her daughter blatantly.
Oh, yes, with a meat tenderizer, which is going to pop up later in the movie.
Right, which I hate because they just recycle that later. I think you might be able to spoiler alert that one for yourselves. But immediately the kid is watching, the boy is watching, mm-hmm. and he has this weird, trippy flashback.
Well, there's a lot of flashbacks in this movie.
That's true.
Which I just don't understand if they're going to... We'll get into that later.
Yeah, but I think... So he's playing outside, and across the street he sees some really bad CGI crows.
Yeah, terrible CGI crows, and they're around something. We can't tell what it is. We don't know. I think it's a bunny?
I don't know. Yeah, we never get a good look at it. But he immediately goes against a box, and, like, picks it up, and for some reason he decides to keep it in his dad's Firebird, which is in the garage. Then we see him getting some Fruit Loops and trying to feed the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's sometime later, he comes back to check on it.
Yep.
And his dad opens up the garage with a golf bag and finds out that he's been keeping this dead animal in the back of his Firebird. Not in the trunk, mind you.
No, like, right in the passenger seat. Yeah.
So we have a cage scene, you know. Why are you keeping that? And the kid runs off to underneath his bed. But we're immediately... So that weird flashback happens. We have no idea what's happening to the little boy now. But,
we cut to the mom mm-hmm. doing a Zumba class. You know, like all the moms do.
Well, I think it's... I don't know if it's Zumba.
It looks like Zumba. It
looks
might be
a little
Zumba.
Bit more like yoga.
Yoga?
It's a lot more bending in the ass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was just like all the, like, 50 to 40-year-old moms or 40 to 50-year-old moms are just bending over. And just doing yoga with this gay guy in, like, short shorts.
Okay, again, I see why you're saying that, but he's never identified as being gay. Be careful.
Okay.
It's 2019.
It is 2019.
How dare you assume. But anyway, so the thing is, that dude, the instructor, I guess, his thighs are just massive. The
he
dude,
squats, all right?
The dude is built, but apparently after that scene, we're cutting to a cafe where mom... and her friend, who happens to also be the mother of the daughter's friend.
Yeah, the blonde one.
are sitting around shooting the shit at a cafe.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't get the Starbucks on this.
Yeah.
Because so that's just immediately what I thought whenever I was watching it. And they were just, they're just talking. And then the mom's friend, who's the mother of her daughter's friend, is talking about how much she hates her daughter and how much she steals money from her and how she can't wait till her daughter gets older so her tits will sag.
Right. This is a very weird scene where she's like aggressively against her daughter.
Yeah.
I've heard of that before, though, and I wish I was trying to find, I really was, I was trying to find some philosophy theories about that kind of stuff, and I've heard of this before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the driving factor, is like the older generation despising being replaced.
Yeah.
Because of their unfulfilled dreams or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like these, the older women, the moms, think that they were always supposed to be the prettiest, but now they're
older.
They're getting out of the way.
Yeah.
I think it ties into like stoicism. Don't quote me on that, but I won't get into that. I think it has to do something with those concepts. Another weird factor is the mom and her friend are also talking about how everybody's banging their way through the instructor there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that collective, like, secret dream that no one can announce, but everyone's, you know, doing it anyways.
Yeah. Then we got back to the teacher talking about
planned obsolescence.
Yes.
Which makes no sense to me, like, why it's in this film. But I think that if you tied it in philosophically, it's not talking about, you know, appliances and stuff. Which, if you guys don't know, planned obsolescence is one hell of a thing to look into. But I think they're talking about generational obsolescence.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the theme of the entire movie. It just kind of struck me when he was talking
about it. It's a very interesting point to make a movie around.
Yeah. I just thought it was either on the nose or like way out of the left field when he mentioned it in class.
Yeah. I think it's on the nose.
But imagine like your teacher just one day teaches you like everything is made to break and be useless and da-da. It sounds kind of tinfoily. Yeah. For a high school, you know.
Oh, especially for high school. And it looks like he's a history teacher.
Right, yeah. I don't know what he's teaching, but he's got like a map on the wall and planned obsolescence written in huge letters. So maybe he's just a woke-ass teacher, man.
He is woke. Look at that. He has a ponytail. He is woke.
He's getting high as fuck in lunch.
So with this, we first get like these phone calls telling kids to go to the principal's office so their parents can pick them up. And then somebody pulls a fire alarm.
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
No? Oh, yeah. We cut to the daughter's boyfriend.
Right. So we get back with the boyfriend from the phone call earlier, and he's actually taking the test.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just like a scene setup shot.
Yeah.
Where we notice that he's taking the test. You know, it's kind of stressful, but the parents of the students taking the test
are just watching him like sharks in a tank.
Right outside the door are just mm-hmm. staring like dead-eyed through.
If you're just like eating a hamburger in front of sharks, that's what it looks like. Like in a tank with glass between them.
I guess. I don't know if sharks like hamburgers. Continuing on. So we get to the like cliche millennial crap.
Oh yeah. Blonde girls vaping.
Yeah, like the bad girl, the rebel child is vaping in the girl's bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And almost forgot to mention this. The whole scene of the mother not trusting the daughter is the idea that both of the daughters are stealing money from both of the mothers, right? And we find out what they're using it for when in the bathroom they make a little drug deal.
Oh, yes, for pills. You know, the white suburban kind of pills.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's all upper middle class. Like, none of this, you'd think if it was like weed or something, that'd be a little more approachable, but I think mm-hmm. they almost intentionally nailed the upper middle class.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know. I was poor. I never stole money from my mom.
Yeah, and I've never done pills.
I never had the urge to steal money from my mom.
Yeah, and I've never
I've never done pills.
I've never done designer drugs. Like, it looked very much like ecstasy or something mm-hmm. with like very colorful pills.
We're speed.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
But while they're in the bathroom, the fire alarm does get pulled.
Yes.
So we just missed it by like a establishing scene.
Yeah, and then everybody goes outside. Yeah. And the teacher's holding them back, and then there's police in between them, the kids and the parents, with just a fence in between them.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are just trying to climb over, just looking at it, and the cops are telling them to back off.
Yeah, there's a horrible little interchange where Let's just get into it. Why not? So,
yeah,
there's like a basic riot situation. The parents are trying to call their kids in. The kids are obviously trying to get to them too, but they're getting separated by the cops. And there's a fence for the adults. And for some reason, one of the cops gets like nose to nose with someone through the fence and is like, "Back up!" Which I just have to say, in that situation, hopefully that won't happen, because the fence is your barrier. You don't need to get close to the fence. Like,
no, like that's easy enough for somebody to just reach in and grab your gun.
Well, that's kind of the concept. It's like the whole knife to the gunfight thing. If you have a gun, you need to keep your distance, otherwise the gun is useless.
Yeah.
Right? So in his situation, he just like goes right up to the fence, or anything could happen.
Well, we'll see him later, and it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. But in that, so right after that, we're basically cutting back and forth. Right, so we establish it. The parents are kind of rioting, and the kids are kind of confused. We go back to the boyfriend who just finished the test.
Yeah,
and as soon as he leaves, he opens the door, and all the parents that were standing outside go rushing in, and we don't
see them go in. We just see him walk to his bike, and then cut back to where the door is, and they're disappeared.
Yeah,
so we assume that they went in and yeeted some kids.
Yeah, so we have no idea what happened there. Unfortunately, it's probably horrible.
Yeah.
But we're back at the school, and this is where things start to degrade.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very much so.
But apparently one of the kids, and you can tell, like, immediately.
Yeah.
That he's going to be the one who fucks it all up, because his mom is calling him, and he, like, tries to jump the fence.
Well, he's a 12-year-old kid. What do you expect if your mom calls you? And
I guess. I don't know. You're right. I guess no one's died yet, but he... Like, there's a struggle, and the teacher from earlier tries to pull him back, and the parents are all dragging him down. But as soon as he gets on the other side...
All we see is bloody keys.
His mom ganks him with a key. Just, like, stabs him. And then immediately after that, everybody starts running away, right?
Running.
And the parents, who before have been defeated by this one fence...
Yeah.
...have finally started climbing over it.
Yeah. And then they're just running, and then we get this awesome football field scene,
right,
where you just see the kids pouring across the football scene or the football field, and the parents are chasing right after them, and there's this one parent that grabs the trash can and grabs the bag and just dumps the trash out of the trash bag and chasing his daughter and loops it around her face and just chokes her out.
It's very brutal. Like, the ingenuity in some of these kills is
very much so. Yes,
it's pretty elaborate.
But we see that cop again beating the shit out of a mother.
Well, I think it's the same person, because he jumps on her and then just beats the, like, just multiple punches hard as fuck to the face. And then he says, "I told you to stay away." And then I guess he just succumbs to the panic and just gets up and screams, and then we don't see him again. But the daughter and her friend have made it away from the football field, and they're in the parking lot. But surprisingly, there's a mob of parents out there.
Yeah.
None of them care about them, so they just let them go by, which is their kind of realization that this isn't just some kind of freakish murder mob.
Yeah, so then we cut back to the boyfriend, and this is the most, I want to say, epileptic scene.
Epileptic?
Yeah, epileptic.
Epileptic.
Epileptic. Epileptic scene ever made in a horror/thriller. I want to say this is more a thriller movie than a horror movie.
Yeah, it's not really, like, horrifying. But the guy gets home, and his alcoholic dad is passed out. He grabs, you know, the trash out of his hand, cleans up some other mess.
Yeah.
And then...
I want to say the moment after he grabs the bottle out of his dad's hand, his hand starts clenching.
Yeah.
Which shows that he's awake.
Right. And so after he goes out and takes out all the trash, he comes back, his dad's gone, or he moved. And this is where we see this really weird scene where earlier the TV had been on.
Yeah.
It's now turned to static. And his dad, you know, he's talking to his dad. He grabs a bottle. And of course, the kid, I guess, being frustrated with his alcoholism, is like, "Haven't you had enough?"
Yeah.
At which point the dad smashes the bottle on something and starts moving towards him. You know, the kid realizes now he's fucked.
Yeah.
Basically.
And then it's just like a whole bunch of scenes just put together, like a whole bunch of cuts just put together, and basically ends as the dad falling and stabbing himself in the neck with a broken bottle.
Right. So the kid basically is trying to avoid him, but gets a table between him and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little accident, and it's like a flurry of fucking cuts and just awfulness. Scenes. And the scene ends on a horrible note because it focuses in on the static.
Yes.
Right? So you're, after all this epilepsy, you're just left with a static, like, getting louder and moving closer, and it's just...
Yes.
It's horrible.
It's terrible. And then we cut to the mom looking into her purse, looking for the money, making sure her daughter didn't steal it, but she did.
Right, and we have a little flashback in that where she's in the shower at one point,
mm-hmm.
and she hears something. She calls out for the daughter who's stealing money, but she just sneaks away.
And then we cut to the mom in this room with this guy talking about, I want to say, her having sex with the guy.
Right, but it seems
that's
like...
That's what I got from it.
Yeah, I think that's the undertone, but I think she's trying to talk about, like, working for him.
Yeah.
At some point, like, being a secretary or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he says something about how she's not cut out for it anymore, but we see it almost at the same time this younger woman walk up, and I think that's the undertone there, too.
It's yeah.
Like, he doesn't really need you right now. He's got her, so, like, you're useless. Get out of my house.
You're old and gross and...
Yeah, you had kids, and I'm a playboy, and...
Yeah.
I don't need you. But she has her little cry moment. She has her little panic attack.
And then she gets a call from her sister, who's having a baby.
Right. And that came up earlier, but, you know. Screw the details, people. This isn't time to think about that.
No. We get to the points when they pop up.
Exactly.
That's a subplot at this point.
But as soon as the mom takes off to go to the hospital, we actually cut back to the daughters.
Yeah.
Who are driving away from the high school and to... her friend's house.
Oh my god, this house. This kitchen is way too big for me.
Yeah.
I would never have a kitchen that big.
But they're obviously well off, so I think these guys are even higher.
Yeah.
On the
upper, totem pole.
Yeah, upper class. And the sister's friend, or the daughter's friend, has mentioned before that her father is always away on business.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the eccentric design of this house is magnificent, but also just, like, way over the top.
And then they cut to, them smoking a joint and watching the news.
Right.
You know, like any teenagers would do.
Well, the daughter, the practical one, the daughter turns on the news and tries to figure out what's going on. And her mm-hmm. friend is kind of oblivious and smokes mm-hmm. a joint.
Which is like one puff.
Right. Then they have this fake out scare, probably the only one in the movie.
The only one.
The friend decides it's a great, even if it's not a horror movie, this is just not a good idea.
No.
She just reaches her hand into a margarita machine.
Yeah.
And there's, like, suspense music, and then she just licks her finger afterwards, and she's like, oh, someone made a margarita, which you could see.
Yeah.
Because there was mix in the bottom of it. But right at the time that the daughter is watching the news and realizing that parents are attacking, her friend decides to go upstairs to investigate. Then we cut to Dr. Oz making a cameo and getting that money.
Well, I mean, there's a $7 million budget for this movie, so yeah.
I guess. Which isn't actually a lot at all.
In my world, it's a lot.
Well, yeah.
If I had a $7 million, you would never see me again.
Yeah, that's true. But in movies, it's nothing. Let that one fester. But she pieces it together. The girl goes upstairs to check on her mom. The friend is like, where are you? And goes up there just in time to see her get choked the fuck out by her
mom. Eat it!
So she has her, like, very cliche horror scream where her hands are on her face, you know,
and
like
then,
psycho.
And then the mother is just like, oh, how you doing?
Yeah.
While she's choking her own daughter with, like, her own tie.
Yeah, she's like, oh, hey. But now, after that scream, the mother is in the hospital.
And watching
and
the
news.
And
we see more news, which is talking about, like, you know, what's happening? Is this terror? Is this The Happening? Is this Bird Box? Is this A Quiet Place? Which movie are we in, people?
Basically.
but before too long, her
sister's
finally gets there.
The most cringiest, like, I had to turn away scenes in
this
movie.
This isn't really horror. It's just, I almost feel like it's just bad. Because like, at one point, either, I think the obvious buildup here, we'll get to in a second, is that the baby's going to get born, and then they're going
to
kill it, which is almost like having an on-screen abortion.
Yeah.
Or they're going to figure out a way to get rid of it. But the concept, just mentioning it, is just so cringy.
It's so cringy. I couldn't look at it whenever. Like, the baby's born, right? And they hand it to the mother like they always do.
Right.
And the mother's just looking at it. And then she grabs a scalpel and starts, like, squeezing the baby. And they get the scalpel away from the mother. And then they finally pull the baby away from the mother. And then they cut the umbilical cord, and then the sister flies across.
Yeah, they're having a tug of war with the baby, and as soon as they cut the umbilical cord, she gets launched, basically. Which apparently this woman who just gave birth is superhuman and is fighting off like four doctors.
Yeah.
Which is its own thing. But I'm just glad that they didn't have us watch this baby get murdered.
Yeah.
Which I'm very glad. So, but again, the triggering event has to deal with the static.
Yeah.
On the EKG meter.
Yeah.
Or EKG monitor.
I'm pointing that out.
So, it's something to do with electronics, presumably. Mm-hmm. Also, as a side note, I guess her boyfriend, the sister's boyfriend, decided to film the pregnancy with a GoPro, which, if you don't know...
With a fisheye lens.
Well, yeah, so it's the worst idea you could have, to film a pregnancy or birth with a fisheye lens. Like,
well, it's just the whole cinematography. I want to shoot the cinematographer for this movie and just shoot it myself.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It'd be so much better.
We'll do it on like a $3 budget.
We'll do it. Yeah. Hey, you pay me $50 and I will shoot this entire movie.
Okay. But so after that horrific scene with the mother like fighting off her sister, and she's traumatized by it, right?
Yeah.
Because only the parents are triggered to kill their babies. So it's kind of shocking to her, especially. But we're back with the daughter who's running through a neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we see this fat guy.
Big old Biggie, yep.
With a goatee, and he's covered in blood with a bloody bat. She's freaked out, and he's, like, staring at her, which it's weird, because it's, like, a fake, I guess.
Yeah. It's trying to be, like, another suspenseful moment that ends with nothing.
Yeah, but her boyfriend actually finds her somehow, and it's like, don't worry, he's not going to mess with us, and then he just gets the mail.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, obviously, that's the whole premise you guys are setting up. Why are you faking us out in the middle of your movie?
Yeah. Basically.
But they decide to go back and find the brother.
Then we cut to Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
The best character and best actor in this movie.
It is 35 minutes in to the whole movie in general before we get back to Nicolas Cage, right? So all the other characters have been doing stuff.
Yeah.
And he, when we cut to him, is just passed out in his office, face on his desk.
Yes.
Okay. And as soon as he wakes up, he tells his...
Secretary,
yeah, not to let any calls come in, especially not his wife.
Yeah. And then he flips up a picture of his family, then cut back to the mother, who is sitting there in the corner with the baby, the infant still.
Yeah.
And then the nurse takes the infant. But I want to say this movie was shot in Tennessee, right?
Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody has an accent besides this cop.
I mean, it's the neo-American dialect, man. We don't have accents anymore. Just listen to me and you.
I mean...
Where are you from?
Midwest.
Where am I from?
I want to say the East.
Southeast.
Yeah, Southeast.
I don't have an accent. You don't have an accent.
No.
Where's your accent at?
I can put my accent in there if you want.
We're sitting in this bunker, okay? Yeah. Avoiding the Holocaust that's outside with the nuclear fallout, okay? We don't have time for accents.
With the My Little Pony movies just constantly playing.
Please, no.
And the new Kim Possible redo.
Oh, no, not the live action. Anything but that. Okay, but yeah, so we're here. The mother has the infant, and under police order, she gives up the infant.
And this guy is cross-eyed like a motherfucker. I don't think he could make it into the force.
Oh, he probably could. He's a straight shooter. But we cut to this really eerie scene.
Oh, yes.
The newborn nursery.
This is the only scene in this movie that gave me, like, chills down my spine.
And all the fathers, like, you kind of expect are looking through the window, but all of them are looking like they just absolutely want to break through the glass and just
murder
all those newborns, which is just so eerie.
Yeah.
But the mother just kind of rushed out of the hospital.
And then we cut back to the Chinese housekeeper.
Yeah.
And she's acting the most Chinese I've ever seen somebody act Chinese.
Racist. But what he means by that is she's a maid, and she's cleaning up the floor where she just murdered her child earlier.
Yes.
And the mom calls and is trying to figure out everything that's going on, right? Because she's pretty traumatized. And at the same time, so she makes a phone call. She says, okay, what's going on? Where's, you know, the kids? Where's my husband? I'm coming home. And we cut back to the daughter and her boyfriend who have arrived at the house.
Yep. And they run into the maid, and the maid is mopping up blood, talking about, like, she dipped the mop in the mop bucket, and the mop bucket's just full of blood since she beat her child to death. And she's just mopping it, and there's blood still mixing everywhere.
And she's acting completely normal about it.
Yeah.
Like, she's just cleaning up the kitchen, which, of course, the daughter freaks out.
Yeah.
Tells her to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the maid actually gets pissed off about that. She's like, you know, I'm just cleaning. You know, no one's going to clean this if I do. Like, you know, fuck you, whatever. It goes off in Chinese of some kind.
Yeah.
And then
the sister runs upstairs and finds her brother under the bed. And then the maid gets in her car and leaves.
Right, and right around the time where she's stressing the fact that they need to leave before the parents get home,
mm-hmm.
There's a really weird kind of a side scene with the boyfriend downstairs.
Watching the news.
Yeah, but they're interviewing a dude who has his hands covered in blood.
Yeah.
And he's basically telling them, like, I can't come up with a reason for it. You know, I'm a monster, but I'm just trying to tell you, like, what I felt. And they're like, how did it feel? And he's like, freeing. And then they cut. Nicolas Cage is now in the house.
Yep, and then
he's
yelling at the boyfriend about being in his house.
Yeah, like, I used to be 17, I know what you're thinking about. Your
hormones,
my daughter, blah 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 blah. Really cliche stuff. And right around the time that it's getting frantic, I think the son triggers it because he wants to go see daddy.
Yeah.
The daughter already knows that if they go down there, that's not going to be a good time.
And it's Cage being Cage.
And as soon as he sees the kids, he immediately goes back to Mafia Don, like, killer face. And tries to get after him. The boyfriend gets in the way and gets fucking palmed, just, like, slap-palmed into the fucking tile floor.
Yep.
So he's out of the picture for a while.
And then Nicolas Cage is chasing his kids, and he trips on a dump truck.
Yeah, so super kind of cheesy. Unfortunately, like, they're escaping, like, he's on the ground out, and they decide to lock themselves in the basement.
And then the cagiest scene.
Yes.
In this entire movie, and I want to say in top five cagey scenes I've seen.
Yeah,
this
really,
is cagey.
It's really weird in context.
Yes.
Or out of context. But they, when they get down to the basement, they see this broken ass pool table, just like smashed into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this extended flashback.
Very long flashback.
To Nicolas Cage building this pool table, assembling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, by hand, and then being frustrated by it. But when he finally gets it figured out, the
mom comes down and telling him how he,
you know, when are you going to tell me about this pool table, and are you trying to build a man cave? And he's like, we need boundaries. And you really just have to watch this scene.
Basically. And he just takes a sledgehammer and just breaks.
Yeah, so, like, the pool table is finally set up, and then he just spends a good few minutes just destroying the crap out of it.
Yep.
But at the end of their fight, they kind of have this nice little closure moment about how their dreams were never fulfilled. And I think it's really just the synopsis of the theme.
Yeah.
Where the lead characters are kind of hashing out their bullshit.
Oh, I want to say the daughter's the main character.
Right, but I guess these are, like, the focal... Yeah. This is the justification for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the meat to the potatoes of the plot. But, so the mom's driving home.
Yep.
And we see this, you know,
jogger
cliche
mom.
Suburbanite jogger mom with, you know...
The jogger stroller.
Yeah, her high-speed stroller pushing her kid. And then for some reason, only when this mom is driving, she just lunges the stroller out into traffic.
Yeah.
She swerves, and she still doesn't understand, right?
Yeah.
She hasn't been triggered yet, so she's like, why is this happening to me?
Yeah, and she's like, why is this going on? And she finally gets home.
The weird thing to me is, right, so the dad was triggered when he saw the picture.
Yeah.
And...
Well, she probably hasn't seen a picture yet.
Well, no, but the mom gets triggered outside.
Yeah.
She's not even in the house yet, so that when she comes in and she finds the dad and the boyfriend knocked out...
Yeah.
She doesn't even really say anything to him.
Mm-hmm.
They just exchange this, like, intense serial killer stare.
Yeah.
And then he tells him, they're in the basement. Right? So.
And she wants the Zaza.
Right. So they're locked, and she tries to do this whole, like, mommy's home. And the daughter's like, I know you're fucking bullshit.
Which is, the cinematography right here was good.
Yeah. The door. They have a nice effect through the door, where they kind of sandwich the two shots together.
Yeah.
So you can see them on either side.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. That's cool. The rest of it's garbage.
Yeah, the rest of the cinematography is garbage.
So, like, right at the moment where the mom realizes that the daughter is onto her, Nicolas Cage does
very cagey.
The best
I'm gonna get through this door, motherfucker! Like, just banging, just like just, overacting the fuck out of his lines.
Like, as if he's on stage trying to do this. And yeah. The audience is 1,000 years away. But no, he's just like banging on this door. So the mother, of course, is... I think this is cliche, but it's always... I hate to say this, but in a lot of these, it's always the mother who's way smarter than the dad.
Yeah, because it's... Well, the cliche is the dad always wants sex and the mother never wants to have sex. And she's the controlling one in the relationship.
Yeah.
And the dad is just stupid, just following.
Yeah, I get the money and you do everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess they kind of play into that because she immediately... Which is weird, but she decides to grab a Sawzall. To cut through the door, but she obviously doesn't know how to use a sawzall. They figure it out at one point. She actually cuts through it, but then she stops.
Yeah.
And they come up with this horribly harebrained scheme later.
Oh my god.
Yes. But we're gonna have to get a little crazy. But what's interesting is when the boy was running downstairs earlier, he mentions to his sister, I need my backpack. And when that happened, I remember thinking, like, oh, you know, Home Alone style.
Yeah.
He's going to have all these, like, weird things in there. But it turns out that he just stole his dad's gun.
Yeah.
And has it in the backpack. So as soon as the mom starts using the Sawzall, the kid shoots up the stairs and ends up hitting her in the arm.
Yeah.
And again, this kid's like, you know, in real life, he's probably around 10 or whatever, but he's supposed to be playing, like, a preschool-age kid.
Right? Yeah.
Then he has this, like, Apocalypse Now flashback.
Yes.
Where he's standing in his underwear in front of the mirror. I mean, if you've ever seen Apocalypse Now, he's, like, holding it and, like, moving through the room. And he's, you know, I'm going to get you, or, you know, doing whatever. And it's pretty intense. It's kind of, it's hilarious at that point.
Yes.
But they do first aid. Once again, this is another scene where Nicolas Cage's character doesn't know anything. And the mother has to kind of talk through what he needs to do.
Oh, yes. With this scene, he's wrapping the gauze around him. And it goes 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7.
No. But here's the interesting thing on that, because I picked up on this. So he's wrapping and he's counting, right? But as soon as he gets to 3, he immediately does say 5, 6, 7, but he's actually doing a count off. Like a dancing count off. So, like, I think he got brainwashed at some point and he's counting, and then all of a sudden, like, it kicked in and he's like, 5, 6, 7. And then the director's like, cut!
Keep it!
And they had to uncage the movie just a little bit. But, anyways, so that goes on. The kids are still downstairs.
And with this harebrained scheme that the parents come up with.
Yeah, it's so weird. So we see the kids, like, just sitting down there, but the parents immediately get to work on how to kill these kids.
Yes.
And their idea is they're going to take gas from the stove line.
Yep.
Lead a garden hose all the way around the outside of the house.
Yep.
Poke it through one of the basement windows.
Mm-hmm.
Pile dirt on top of it to create airtight seal. And then turn on the gas line and basically just gas suffocate them out.
Yes.
Which I guess could work, but it's, like, the hardest thing to do. And mainly, I think it's driven by the fact they have a gun.
Yeah.
Right? So they know that you can't just go in there. But it's, like, so far out there. There's so many other things you could have done. I actually was thinking, by the way, before they did the gas, I was thinking they could just flood it.
Yeah.
With water.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the hose, I was like, okay. But they were already dealing with the stove. So it's weird. There's multiple ways you can skin the cat. They chose the gas way. Which comes into effect later.
Oh, yeah.
But the daughter's, like, trying to figure out what's going on. They're, like, taping everything up on the door.
Oh, yes. And there's a scene where the daughter pokes her finger
through the duct tape.
Through the duct tape, and the mom sees it, and she has a knife.
Oh, so cringy. I don't want to see any fingers get split in half like that.
And she's just like, and then she tries to stab, and it misses.
Yeah, and the daughter pulls back in time. But it's the only real horror moments. You know, the idea of, like, this finger just getting split down the middle by huge kitchen knife.
Yeah.
But then we just get to this weird part where, like, the kids are downstairs, the parents are upstairs, they're just waiting for the gas to build up.
Yeah.
The parents are talking about how, like, oh, honey, how long will we wait? Oh, you'll hear him coughing. Oh, that's nice. And they, like, hold hands. And the sister is trying to figure out, like, ways to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to mention, but I did while we were watching this. At any point in time, they could have gotten the gun.
Yeah.
And then shot the parents in the back because they were sitting up against the wall or the door.
But I feel like they would have duct taped the bottom that we didn't see.
But they didn't.
True.
They didn't. Okay. Yeah. So this gets them all into the thing, but they're basically choking out, and the daughter's trying to figure out a way to make this all work, right?
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the duct.
MacGyver.
Yeah, and she figures out a way to get out, and then she finds a box of matches.
Yeah.
And IED rigs the door with, like, the match strip and duct tapes a few match heads in place under the door.
So whenever the parents open the door, it blows up.
Exactly. And it's pretty ingenious in a way, but I also am kind of skeptical.
Yeah.
But they can hear the coughing. So the whole time the gas is building up and the kids are coughing.
Yep.
And as they sneak out into the crawl spaces, they don't hear the coughing anymore, so they think it's time to open the door.
Yeah.
And the mother goes back into the kitchen, and she picks up a knife and that meat tenderizer again.
Yes, the meat tenderizer,
which is the
main weapon of this movie.
I hate, because they just recycle it, you know? Like, yeah. They could have done anything else in the house.
Yeah.
But they just go back for the meat tenderizer. Okay, but they open the door, Nicolas Cage cuts through the lock with the Sawzall.
Yeah.
And, you know...
He Sawzall!
And what's interesting is, at one point, they're both standing in front of the door, but he actually tells her, like, hey, step back for some reason. And as he pulls it off, the MacGyver mechanism works. And... basically, Nicolas Cage just gets blasted through the wall behind him.
Yeah, and I think he's dead.
Right. I mean, it's like he's covered in flame before we cut away from him.
Mm-hmm.
We see the slow motion, shock ripple through his face. And him and the mom get thrown, but he actually disappears and the mom just gets thrown into the kitchen.
Yeah.
We cut to black and we see her getting back up. She's covered in shit.
I would say, from that explosion.
Yeah, and she actually goes back and finds the dad, and he's busted through the wall, laying on stuff with, you know, more crap thrown all over him. It looks like the pantry.
Yeah.
But we actually... she's just looking around the house trying to figure out what's going on, and we follow the kids, who are now upstairs, somehow.
Somehow. They teleport.
Yeah, they crawled all the way through all the duct during the explosion.
And then we cut back to... the daughter, whenever she was younger, telling her, telling her mom, thank you for making me pretty.
Right. It's like this little scene where the little girl's doing makeup in the mirror and she's like, I'm sorry, mommy, I didn't mean to do it. And at this point, the mom's being like super constructive, you know, like real nice about it. She's like, oh, you're so pretty. And she's like, thanks for making me pretty. She's like, you were born that way.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Yeah. And we immediately cut back to the mom seeing her upstairs, and they have this frantic fight.
And then the boyfriend wakes up.
Yeah, so he keeps coming in and out, but the boyfriend wakes up just in time, and they frantically struggle with way more cuts, with, like, lights and strings and all this. This one was almost worse than the dad, you know, the boyfriend's dad
scene. I could actually tell what was going on in the pacing of
I guess, yeah. It was a little more lit, but it was just kind of, like, it was still epilepsy levels.
Mm-hmm.
But they lock her in the closet.
And then they just sit there and laugh.
Right, which is so weird. They get her in there, and they can actually use some of the devices around them, like the string lights and some other stuff, to like tie the handles together and keep her in there. But they just stop, and they just have this little laugh session.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it gives the mother time to rig this horrible weapon, which is just an unspun wire coat hanger.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Right. And so she's swinging it around through the gap, and then somehow she like fish hooks the boyfriend through the cheek.
Through the cheek. I've not seen that before in a horror movie. That's my first.
I mean, yeah, that was kind of creative. But by the time he gets out of the room, she's out again. The mom's broken free, and he pulls it out of his own face.
And then starts running down the hallway, and it falls down the banister.
Well, she shoves him.
Yeah.
The mom comes up behind him and just chucks him. And what's crazy is...
yeet!
The dude hits the railing, falls over and across the stairs, hits the banister at the bottom, and then flops back down to almost where he was earlier.
Yeah.
He didn't break the banister when he hit it. So I was like, this guy weighs 10 pounds. Like, he just fell full force onto the banister, and it's still standing there.
Yeah. Then Nicolas Cage wakes up.
Yeah, so
with fruity pebbles all over his face.
Yeah, so... it's like the funniest awkward scene, but now Nicolas Cage is looking super crazy.
Yes.
He has the Sawzall.
And this is where he says Sawzall?
Like, all
the
time.
Oh my god.
Yes. He's like, the best line. Saws. Oh, like, oh, so bad.
Screaming it.
Right. And they have the kids locked in the, basically blocked off in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden the doorbell rings.
Mm-hmm. and then the parents, the grandparents come in.
Right, which is kind of like a tie back. I actually had forgotten this originally, but they're like, oh yeah, I forgot. They're coming home for dinner. And so it kind of gets back to this normal kind of vibe. But it turns out that as soon as Nick Cage opens the door, his dad is trying to kill him because this isn't just exclusive to this generation. And he and his dad are fighting, and he's saying all kinds of crazy, like, veteran shit.
I was a nom!
And the grandma is talking mad shit to the mom, like, basically, you're a whore! You don't even have a real name! Like, all this craziness. And the kid runs off. The boy runs off to the car.
Basically, it's the dad chasing the boy, and then the grandpa chasing the dad.
Right, and then the moms are all in the kitchen with the daughter, and they're all just sitting around. Which is crazy, because the mom tells the grandma, you don't want to kill him, he's just, only your son. But then she immediately goes back and tries to kill her own kid. Yeah. So it's kind of a weird double standard thing.
Then we get another flashback.
Right.
To Nicolas Cage sitting with his son. I think this is after the dead bunny in a car thing.
Yeah, I think it's right after. But it's so fucking weird for the pacing.
Oh my god, Nick Cage
is just being like super...
cagey.
Oh, but he's being so, what's the word for it? Like... explicit. Like, he's calling it a pussy magnet, and like, if you ever touch my car, I'll fucking kill you, and does the serial killer stare again.
And then he smiles.
Yeah, and then he's like, ha ha ha. It's super cagey. But now they're back in the garage where the boy ran off to get into the Firebird, and the dad and grandpa are still fighting. They're in the Firebird now.
Yes.
And they're moving the car, like, it's on, it's in reverse, and they're backing up against the garage door.
They're trying to break through the garage. Nick Cage is trying to break through the garage.
Right.
To get away.
And the mom and grandma are now fighting.
Yeah.
With pepper spray and all that. And almost at this exact time, the fight between both of them leaves the house. So Nick Cage busts through the garage door, and the grandma and mom get chased outside. And in one foul swoop, the grandma gets chunked in front of the Firebird as it goes screaming down the driveway.
And then the grandpa gets launched.
Yeah, from the top of the Firebird down to the hood, and his head just smashes.
Just explodes.
Like, he has a really soft head. Yeah. And right after the end of that, we cut back to the mom and the daughter behind her. And as soon as the mom turns back, she gives the daughter that killer look. But the boyfriend shows up and gives her the good old shovel girl treatment.
Yep. Boink!
Which I actually forgot. So, like, right before that, when the mom and everything is running out, it's all because the daughter leaves.
Yeah.
And the mom chases her down and gives her the good old shovel girl treatment with the meat tenderizer.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know she's dead, right?
Yeah.
Like, you get hit in the head with that and you're gone. And then after all that, the boyfriend comes up with the real shovel. But the final scene of the movie...
Yeah.
I'm trying to be a little quick here, because we're almost out of time. But the final scene of the movie...
No, we're on my phone, so we have enough time.
The final scene of the movie is the mom and dad are now tied up back in the basement.
And they're just talking.
And the mother, or the daughter and the son, and I think the boyfriend are down there.
Yeah.
They're all talking about how, like, we can't trust you. And so it's kind of funny.
We love you, but we just want to kill you.
Well, but what I'm saying is the kids are now giving the parents the same, like, we want to trust you talk that they got in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's another theme point, right? After each generation exercises its, you know, desires, they immediately go into, like, a retirement home or something like that, right? Now the kids are taking over. So I think this is actually part of a bigger theme. But at the last second... one of the pool balls rolls up to Nicolas Cage, and so we think he's about to do something, and he's like, his final scene is, you know, kids, me and mom love you, but sometimes we just wanna, and then it cuts.
Yeah, it cuts. And we even looked past the credits and see if there was an after credit scene.
Yeah, but that
there
is
was
it.
Nothing.
That is the end of the movie.
So on the radioactive scale, what do you put it?
I'm thinking somewhere between 5 and 6.
5 and 6. So it's a good movie to you.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
It's lacking. It's watchable.
Yeah, it's watchable.
And again, like, for me, when I watch a movie, I'm looking for stuff like theme and motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the metaphor or the moral of it. And this one obviously has one.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, like, completely worked out with the static being the triggering mechanism.
Yeah.
And what's actually going on, but it... And you're right. The cinematography needs... would need work.
Well, the cinematographer, I looked it up whenever I did all my little research, is that he did mostly music videos.
Hmm. So I'd almost see that.
Yeah.
Maybe he's kind of overcompensating as he's coming into the...
Yeah.
The movie.
The big ones.
Yeah. The movie industry. What's your take on it?
It was good. I think... I'll give it like a 10, I want to say. It was good. I mean, cinematography was the big thing for me.
So even with some faults, you're giving it a 10.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes, basically.
Yeah, and I do like it. Like, it does have its issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is a relatively short movie.
Yeah, it's very... It's only like an hour and 30 minutes long.
Right, and I think it's even less. I think it's like somewhere around 123.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's in all that time...
Yeah, with the shortness of it, it gets its point across. Yeah. It has a good pacing. With the flashbacks, it kind of puts it back a little bit.
Right.
But I don't understand why they would have the flashbacks.
Well, but I think it's just the way they decided to tell it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you could have a movie go straight on through without any flashbacks.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a way of getting context after the fact.
Yeah.
So you set everything up and you don't have to worry about a lot of dialogue.
It was a very interesting take. And it's very interesting story to tell. I've not seen a story told like that before.
It is original. I mean, it has, like, it's, you know, post-apocalyptic almost, you know, like, mass pandemic feel.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's not unescapable. There's no nukes. There's no, you know, it's happening right now.
It's like a zombie thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't end everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, and I think it is an accurate representation of the concept of generational issues.
Yes.
And this is a way of making it more physical, right? Mm-hmm. Where our frustration between, you know...
Baby boomers and millennials is just...
Right, and like the latchkey kids are like the Generation X, the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
Where their parents were from.
Mm-hmm.
It really does hash out a lot of the... It's cliche, but it does hash out a lot of their frustration.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because I think the more and more I see BuzzFeed articles about millennials,
you know,
the more and more I just want to do this.
Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of...
I mean...
It's refreshing.
Almost. I'm technically millennial, and some of these millennial things piss me off.
Yeah.
I think it's just how you're raised.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, we could totally break off into the psychology of generational, like, assignment, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie does... exactly what it's supposed to, and it doesn't... I love the fact that it's not trying to make a sequel.
Yeah, no, it's not.
You know, it's an original idea.
And it's Cage being cagey.
Oh yes, let the man free. He's a
we
peacock.
Might do a whole series of just Cage movies.
They're
fun to do, and he's a fun actor to watch.
I mean,
they're not always bad.
Yeah, but it's weird to me, okay? Because Nicolas Cage is not what I would call a good actor.
No.
But he's watchable.
He's very watchable.
You know, like, I just don't get it, man. Like, how do people keep paying him for anything? It's crazy. But yeah, it's enjoyable.
It's enjoyable.
It's a roller coaster. But I guess that's it. That's my take.
Yeah, all right.
I guess, so, guys, I know that we've been gone for a long time. We had a little bit of momentum, right? Like, we tried to do some social media stuff, and I still am working on getting our stuff on a different quality level.
Yes.
Okay, so that's still in the works.
We were currently working on that. And I've started a new podcast with my other buddy.
He's betrayed me.
Yeah, I have betrayed you, but it's still under the new Guerrilla Media umbrella. It's called Phasers, Wands and Swords. You can find that on Anchor and any other podcast. It's a whole bunch of nerdy stuff.
Nerdy goodness. All right, guys. So just look out for more episodes. Hopefully, we won't get caught up into some more rigmarole this year. But look forward to reviewing more videos. And hopefully, you guys stick along for the ride.
This is Will.
And Will. And this is New Guerrilla Media.
Have a good night.
Baga!
You always do.
Oh, yes. It's still rolling.